This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be with you, Matt and Brett here. Brett, have you gone outside lately?
I did, and I was cold, and it was windy, and not enjoyable.
Very Gobi Desert out there right now. There's no snow, but it is, I think we're at 8 is the air temperature. It's minus 10, 20 or something like that on wind chill right now.
It's not getting any warmer tonight.
Well, it's not, is it? I got to walk the dog tomorrow morning. The good news is I take the dog out. I was like, okay, I've had enough of this. Let's go back inside. All right, we're done. Hope you're staying warm out there. And you all had a nice weekend. We'll get more to that here coming up in a little bit. Plus a lot of things, including Chief Arredondo has decided to step down next year. We'll talk about the new search for a brand new chief of police in the city of Minneapolis. But joining us right now is Rick Smith. Now, we, of course, have great programming 24/7 here, and it's just a pleasure to welcome Rick and his show, The Rick Smith Show, to our airwaves 8 to 10 o'clock weeknights here, and he's kind enough today to join us to talk about his show and in progressive radio and his strong worker vibe. It's great to have him with us. Rick, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much, Matt. I appreciate you having me on.
No, it's my pleasure, man, and you coming to us from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, correct?
Yep, Central Pennsylvania, the home of the Army War College where I live, because we love war here.
That's what I was U.S. Army. So.
We're still, you know, look, dude, I'm 45 minutes from Gettysburg, and we're still fighting the Civil War, which evidently, you look around, our country wants to go right back to. I don't know if you saw the display from the Capitol here not too long ago. You had these nitwits in khakis running flags through the Capitol. Crazy times we live in, Matt.
Indeed, crazy. I will say this about where you're at. I have been to Gettysburg. I have been there. That is a gorgeous part of the country, southern Pennsylvania, south central part of Pennsylvania, and fantastic pizza, too.
That's a beautiful place. I love it here. I'm a transplant. I grew up on the west side here. It was like culture shock because there are more Confederate flags in my neighborhood than there are not.
Yeah, it's like they've lost it. You go to Indiana, Iowa, it's like, okay, you guys don't realize what you're doing there. I get furious in Minnesota when I see the Confederate flag, considering what happened at Gettysburg with the first Minnesota and them saving the Union on the second day. I was like, make sure you understand you're not rooting for the home team there.
No, real quick, the story when I first moved to this area, the first guy I met, he had a big blue X up on his flagpole. And I asked him, I said, hey, what's with the cannon in your living room window? And he went into this whole story about how they play dress up and they're refighting the Civil War and they're fixing all of the mistakes. And when I asked him, you know, what side he dressed up on, he said, the only side that matters, boy. Oh. And I knew I was in trouble.
Oh, wow. Wow, so you're an idiot then. That's kind of my next response. You don't know what the heck you're talking about. Rick, your journey into radio here, I got to tell you, I've been doing this show here in various time slots for about almost 12 years, and I've watched as progressive radio went downhill, and now it's starting to come back and come back strong. And you know, your show here, strong union, strong worker, talk about the workers' issues. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to the Rick Smith Show as it is right now.
I fell into this by accident. I never wanted to do radio. I never wanted to be the guy who says, hey, look at me. In 2004, I did an awful lot of work to try and get John Kerry elected. That didn't work out. And when we moved to this area in 2005, I noticed a lot of my truck driver buddies, because I've been a Teamster for over 30 years, were spewing the lines of, you know, Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and, you know, all of them, just regurgitating these lines ad nauseum, like, you know, we'd make more money here if there was no union, which is ludicrous and ridiculous. But, hey, they were still spitting it on anyway, because it's what they were surrounded by. It's what they were hearing all day long at work. There was nothing else. So I happened to suggest that a Democratic Party meeting, hey, what you need to do is you need to fight in the media airwaves. You need to add some balance. So we got a group of people together to start a little local radio program. And, I raised some money to help us do that. And, you know, that was the beginning of it. You know, Labor Day of 2005, we kicked off. And That was my foray into doing anything on the radio. And it's been an amazing ride over these last 16 years. We've done some really incredible things, like a cross-country labor history tour. We did a cross-country civil rights tour. We've done all kinds of things to educate working people about really important issues and how labor is at the center of it. And I believe in this moment, labor could be at the center of this because every policy, everything that goes on, we can draw back to the workplace, and labor contracts can help with that.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's you know, I'm you know, tried and blue through and through. I believe in the unions. I believe in workers' rights. We of course the history of the unions with the Iron Range in Minnesota, where they came out from there, and of course the fights that they had in the 1930s for workers' rights in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm a strong, you know, supporter of union rights, but the one thing that's been incredibly frustrating is I will get union guys in here, union representatives, and they'll talk about, yeah, we're supporting this Republican. And I keep trying to tell them that Republican who's promising you the world, if that Republican has the tie-breaking vote to wipe out all unions in your state, they will take it with joy and brag about killing your union. I just don't know where this false perception that Republicans care at all about unions and workers' rights came from.
No, I think George Meany back in the 60s said it best. We've done too good for our members. When you're making, it's hard to get a guy to go on strike when they're making $10,000 a year. I think in a lot of places they have done. They've done really well for their members. They've gotten them excellent wages. We know union workers make 18 to 30% higher in wages. We know that overwhelmingly they have much, much more access to health care and retirement benefits and better health care and defined benefit, pension, retirement security. They've got a voice in the job. They've got all these things that they now have taken for granted. And they think, you know, as Harry Truman said, they think they're Republicans. And the reality is if you give, you know, a voter the choice between voting for a Republican and a Democrat that acts like one, they're going to choose the real deal. So for me, a lot of Democrats are at fault as well, because they weren't the clear choice that came out and said, no, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to protect you and I'm going to fight for you. You know, you go back to Carter, they could have undone Taft-Hartley. You go back to Clinton, they were supposed to get rid of a strike replacement. Obama shook my hand twice, told me, we're going to get you something better than the Employee Free Choice Act. And in all of those occasions, we got nothing. Mm-hmm. So when workers are looking at this and go, well, at least the Republican's going to give me maybe possibly a tax break, that might help. And it never works out. But that's, I think, part of where the thinking goes into. And then the Republicans have done a great job on the culture issues with the God, guns, and gay stuff, mm-hmm. Which, again, ludicrous and ridiculous. But still, it's what they've sold to people.
I would agree. And let me also, if I can bring up another point, the Democrats, the DFL here in Minnesota, the Democrats have failed at, is that it's fine that if as a Democrat, you want to oppose, say, an oil pipeline. That's absolutely, I can understand that. That's kind of within your range. But you got to understand the worker relation there. And the idea is don't just sit there and say, we're against the pipeline. You sit there and say, you know what? That pipeline is just going to put a lot of, you know, Canadian tar sands oil into our country. I don't like that. Instead, I want to build the infrastructure for 16 more light rail lines in Minneapolis, St. Paul, which will not only give us construction jobs, but will give us long-term good union jobs for the drivers and the workers on those trains afterwards. You have to have a better presentation than just telling people what you're against.
Absolutely. And I think Jay Inslee, you know, during the presidential election back in 2020, I loved his Green New Deal plan. I loved his plan for how we were going to make the transition. And they were right at the front of it. These are going to be union jobs. We're going to replace those coal miners we're going to take them out of those dirty mines. We're going to put them in the factories making, you know, solar panels or wind turbines or whatever the next generation can teach them to wire things. These are people with excellent skills. We can train them to make and fix things. There has to be that just kind of transition that in the past working people are a little gun shy on, Matt. I mean, you go back to all of the so-called progress of the past has always left working people, you know, basically holding the bag and the bills. When we were doing free trade, when we were letting companies outsource, it was always the workers who took it on the chin. So I do understand a little bit of their reticence, and this is where you're spot on. We got to come with absolute concrete policies. This is how we're going to help. Mm-hmm. This is how nobody gets left behind. Even if we have to make kind of a tax system where we say, you know what, whatever your standard of living is, we're going to redline this. You're not going to fall below this. We do this stuff to corporate America all the time. We can do it for working people.
And we can. And I think as well, it's also not understanding the full story. I'll give you another great example. Up on the Iron Range, they wanted to put in one of those sulfur mines, especially right up in the Boundary Waters canoe area, which is a bad idea. But at the same time, people want jobs. Well, if you built three, you know, steel foundries in the United States, put three more, because we've had a ton close because they can't compete overseas. Build three top of the line, brand new steel processing facilities here. They would have every taconite mine in northern Minnesota and northern Michigan, for that matter. They'd be up to full capacity, full workloads immediately, because you got to solve the problem. You can't just look at, well, we only want to do one, you know, small element of it. And the reality is you can solve these problems. It just it takes, you know, some spending, it takes some commitment, and it takes understanding the problem as a whole.
No, you're absolutely right. But it also takes communication and trust. And we're in a moment right now where we're not talking to each other, Matt. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've got friends who, you know, I've been fortunate over my life to have conservatives that I sit in, we have a beer and we discuss things, we argue, we have heated conversations. At the end, we shake hands and slap each other on the back and go, we'll get you next time. We don't do that much anymore. I mean, we've got our silos and our talking points, and we bomb each other with whichever talking point that we don't understand, and try to win these idiotic debates, when the reality is all that's happening is the wealthy are getting wealthier and all of us in the working class are getting poorer. And one of the things that I came across over the weekend, this new economy project in New York, pointed out that J.P. Morgan Chase alone in New York City extracted over $1 billion in fees and overdraft fees and penalties from working class New Yorkers, over $1 billion during a pandemic. And you go, how is that allowed to happen? How do we have government that allows that to happen? How do we have policy that allows a working class to get screwed that badly? And they're not even the worst. I mean, we're getting screwed every day at the gas pump. I just saw the big oil companies pocketed $174 billion in profits in the first 9 months. And we're going, gee, why are oil prices so high? I think we kind of know. Massive redistribution of wealth from you and me and your listeners and mine to their pockets. Yeah. And that's how this has always been. They love to point us out. It's right or left, Democrat, Republican. No, it's the rich against the rest of us. And until we wake up to that reality, until we wake up to the reality that Jay Gould was right, he could pay half the working class to murder the other half, we're going to get nowhere but splintered and pitted against one another.
Oh, yeah. And I can tell you, you're exactly right on that, too. The wealthy are kicking our butts, and it's not even close. I mean, this is just an absolute, you know, caboose kicking. And the reality is that it's just too easy for some people to convince some that, like when you mentioned gas prices, oh, it's Joe Biden's fault. No, it's not necessarily. But at the same time, it's every president's had to deal with this. It's kind of the petroleum industry, OPEC. It's how the markets work. It's not so linear as that. Oh, Joe Biden, not only did he take our turkey away at Thanksgiving, but he's raising the gas prices. They love to try to create this narrative. And the reality is, when you get people who are so chomping at the bit to buy that reality and that narrative, well, it's hard to convince them to come back to reality.
Yeah, I bought the T-shirt, Matt. This is my team. No way can it be wrong.
Yes.
And that's on both sides. Look, I mean, we've splintered so badly that we can't agree that someone else may have a good idea. And I've said all the time, I'm a green conservative liberal libertarian. If it's a good idea, it's going to help the working class move forward, let's hear it out. Let's hash it out. And let's get something done. The sad reality is, for working people in this country, nothing has really gotten done in like 50 years. Mm-hmm. Our wages are stagnant. Our health care is getting worse. It's getting more expensive. Our retirement security is completely gone. They've eviscerated what was the three-legged stool of retirement that my grandparents built of Social Security, defined benefit pension, and savings, and they've whittled it down to one leg of maybe Social Security if it's there, and even that they're trying to destroy. So at some point, I'm hoping that the working class of this country wakes up and goes, oh, wait a second, all of that nonsense that Fox News is spewing at us and all of that nonsense that we're getting to pit us against one another, got to stop it. We got to come together. And this is why, you know, I say this all the time. On the election night 2020, I wasn't worrying about results because I knew it would be a week. I was not leading a strike on a picket line. That's where we've got to do this stuff. That's where we solve our income inequality problems. That's where we solve our race problems. That's where we solve are all of our problems. For me, the first time I ever heard of the transgender issue was like 25 years ago at work, where someone had gone and transitioned and came back. And you know what happened to that person? Nothing. They went back to work. They did their job. They got the same paycheck they got no matter what, who, or how they were. And to me, this is the way forward, Matt.
Well, and I'll give you, how about another one? By the way, I can't wait for the time when I can look at someone saying, hey, it's a pandemic. I don't want you dead. And someone looks at me and says, how dare you? And you're like, okay, wait a minute here. Something's broken.
No, here's another thing. You may remember last year, Republicans like Lindsey Graham were losing their ever-loving freaking minds over extending unemployment benefits. But now you got Republican states saying, well, you know, if you lose your job because of the vaccine mandate, you get to get unemployment benefits. And I say, well, how about me? How about me who got vaccinated but doesn't want to be around unvaccinated people who might make me sick? Do I get it? Oh, no, 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 no. You got to show up. But the unvaccinated know where to come in this country, Matt. Mm-hmm.
I do want one of the things that President Biden has done that I really like, and I'd love to get your take on it, is the American Rescue Plan is putting out here. John Renan, who writes for the Star Tribune here in town, put out this point. It's passed without a single GOP vote in the House and the Senate. The money is going to all the townships, these 1,780 townships in Minnesota, will get a total of $107 million in federal stimulus. Nearly 300 townships will get $100,000 or more. I mean, that's real money that's going to help these communities out. You know, the bread and butter issues, the kitchen table issues, that's the kind of thing. And now it takes the Democrats getting in behind that and saying, yeah, are you glad? Let's do more of that.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. The other team isn't going to see it that way. They're not going to see, they don't care. It's still about the former guy, and they feel cheated. I can't tell you how many times, and I'm sure you get this too.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I get that from the other side. I'm hoping, and I'm told there are some still out there, some rational, reasonable Republicans who look at what's happened to their party and go, this is too far, and bring them back to somewhere, I'm not talking total sanity, but somewhere near the sane line.
Yes.
To be the kind of Republicans that I remember, oh, I don't know, you know, 25, 30 years ago, maybe even not someone as bad as even Pat Buchanan, who, if you remember, he was the fringe of the Republican Party in 92. Now he seems like, well, a hippie liberal at this point.
He might be. He definitely would be. That party has moved so far to the right. And I will say this, too. It's only a matter of time before every Republican takes credit for that bill that they voted against. So, and their voters will allow them to do it. So, you know, okay, whatever. Yep.
There's no question about it.
And
look, Democrats need to call them out on this. This is where you and I come into play and talking about this, because this kind of investment in the future of our country is vitally important. There's one party that wants to move us forward, wants to move us towards solving our climate problems, wants to move us towards solving our race and inequality problems, and there's one that just wants to literally burn the freaking house down.
Yeah.
And it's never been more apparent than it is right now.
And one final thing I want to bring up, since you brought up unions, one of the things I think is the biggest shame of the Republicans is how they vilified a lot of the union jobs. Carpentry, pipe fitters, drivers. You know, it's these jobs are looked down upon. And the reality is, for a lot of people in this country, if you're looking for good work, I mean, in this day and age when people are walking away from crap jobs that don't pay them anything and don't give them any benefits, people can get into the skilled trades, and there's a great job there. And that's one of the crimes. As the Republicans have sucked up to the unions, they've also at the same time vilified the unions and turned those jobs into less than palatable, when reality is those are great jobs.
Yeah, well, they did that, and my grandparents did that too. My grandfather told me if I would be following his footprints and become a union truck driver, that I would be a failure. But I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers because of the income and the wages that I earned and the benefits that I had and all of that. I don't feel much like a failure. I don't want that kind of thing to be passed down to my kids. Every electrician job, every pipe fitter, every plumber, every sheet tin knocker, and every sparker out there, man, those are good family sustaining wage jobs, and with good decent hard work attached to it and respectability. There's nothing wrong with that.
Rick, an absolute pleasure having you as part of our lineup here. I want to drive people to thericksmithshow.com, thericksmithshow.com. He airs here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, 8 to 10 o'clock at night. You can podcast all of his shows. If you go to the website, you can find all that information. Welcome to Minneapolis, my friend.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. You got to come and talk with me on my show.
My pleasure, and you're going to come on back and talk with me more on my show, if that's possible.
Anytime you will have me.
Absolutely. Rick Smith, The Rick Smith Show, weeknights 8 till 10. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Nice. Nice having Rick on the air. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Rick Smith, once again, his show. I mean, we got a powerhouse lineup. Okay, it's Brett. It's Native Roots Radio After Us, which, by the way, is just also a freaking exceptional show. I mean, it's like I'm just privileged to lead into that show. Coming up at 7 o'clock?
Always the very popular broadcast. Love that show as well.
And then we've got Rick Smith from 8 till 10. And after 10 o'clock, it's...
Yeah, just a quick note about Rick's show. That's live as well, so you are able to call in if you want during the program.
How? And I didn't even have time to bring this up with him. How great is it from the time I started here, when we used to have live progressive radio hosts nationwide 24/7, how great is it? Because there was a concerted effort to wipe out all progressive radio. I mean, there was a time, and I'm not joking, back when we were doing the old morning grind, I did a search of radio stations in this country. I found 6 total progressive radio shows outside of this station. 6! And now we've got nighttime live programming here with Rick Smith right here on AM 950. After Rick?
We got Randy Rhodes, of course, from 10 to midnight. And yeah, that takes us
into
the
evening.
And
at some point you do a best of me in the overnights. What the hell, man? Well, I guess we'll take another commercial break. I do like one of the things that Rick, there's 2 things I want to bring up here. One is that I stand by that issue. If you're a union and you've got union members who are saying, let's vote for the Republican, that Republican, they can lie their butt off all day long. If they are the tie-breaking vote to wipe out all unions in the state of Minnesota, they will sprint down the aisle in St. Paul. Sprint to go out there and kill your union and then look at you and say, gee willikers, shame on any union that votes Republican. And I'm sorry. It's like he said, the Republicans did a really good job with the, God's guns and gays issues, and that to really rile up, the people that are on that side of where guns are more important or their, and let's be honest, their false idea of what their religion is all about is important to them, or their hatred of the GLBTQ community. They did this and they riled these people up. But the reality is that if I was a union rep, if I was a union head, and I had union members coming to me and saying, "Here's the deal, we're thinking of voting Republican," I would look at them and said, "No. You want to vote Democrat because Republicans want to kill us. They want to kill you, not make you feel bad. They want to annihilate your union." And you're like, "Well, because Trump says things I like, I think we should go with him." Yeah. Suicide pact. That's what that is. Trust me, go to states that have slowly become more Republican, like Indiana, that has slowly become more Republican, and look at what's happened to the unions in those states. And look what's happened to the jobs and the wages. Gone. Benefits, gone. Democrats as well, and I want to make sure I say this. Democrats, you've got to have a better selling point than just telling people what you're against. And like I said, you're against the pipeline. Very justifiable. That pipeline, line 3 is god-awful. Line 3 is god-awful. Line 5 is god-awful, too. Line 3 is god-awful. But for these people with jobs, if you follow it up, if you, because their thing is, I'm for jobs. Well, if you're for jobs, great. Let's build commuter lines, rail lines, from Minneapolis to Duluth, from Minneapolis to St. Cloud, from Minneapolis to Rochester, from Minneapolis out to Fargo. From Minneapolis over to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Let's build more light rail lines in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Because I can tell you what, you build more of those, that's going to be a heck of a lot of jobs. I'm watching these guys every day build the Southwest light rail line right outside this freaking station. So a lot of people working on that line all the way from Minneapolis out to Eden Prairie. A lot of people. A lot of jobs for, 5, 6 years? And then afterwards, as opposed to an oil pipeline, which will have 2 or 3 total freaking employees, when it's built, you're going to have employees driving trains, maintaining trains, working front office. There's a lot of money to be made there. It's just a better investment for the people. So that's how you negate that entire argument. Well, I'm for jobs. Well, then if you're for jobs, let's can this project and go down there and start building light rail lines. Hubba-da, 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 hubba-da. Watch the conservative head spin at that point. Oh, you know, we shouldn't have the sulfur mine up by Ely. Well, I'm for jobs. Well, if you're for jobs, let's build three foundries that will build American steel in this country. And then tomorrow you'll have every taconite mine back to full capacity. Then you don't even have to build that mine up there. Humana, humana, humana. They don't know what to think at that point. They have no idea what to think. It's easy to do the knee-jerk thing and just say no. Now, I think we both all can agree on both of those cases. Dear Lord, we shouldn't be building any more oil pipelines. And dear Lord, we should not be getting into sulfur mining by the Iron Range up by the Boundary Waters, for goodness sakes. But if it's some kind of troglodyte that likes to grunt out one syllable words and basically says jobs, and that's all they say to you, well then smack them back with, oh, I got a plan for some jobs. And guess what? It won't involve god-awful oil from Canada. It won't involve potentially poisoning off the most pristine natural area in the northern tier of the United freaking States. Gee willikers. Golly gosh. 952-946-6205. Nice to have Rick on the air. Once again, Rick Smith coming in. That's 8 to 10 weeknights right here on AM 950. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Hi there. Matt McNeil, your kinkologist. If we can just add ologist to anything...
Save that for your OnlyFans.
Yeah, no. The OnlyFans followers already know I'm a kinkologist. Hello there.
You have a graduate degree.
Call me Dr. Kinkologist. Thank you very much. I didn't just go to a regular school to be called a Mr.
Hostologist.
It's going to be kinkologist.
Kinkologist.
Yeah, man. I was going to go spankologist, but I can realize that one could come back and bite me quite literally in the caboose at every Blue State ball from here on out. So,
yeah,
I'll just go with the kinkologist. Hello there. No. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Well, the breaking news that happening today, Minneapolis Police Chief Arredondo announced Monday that he will not seek a third term with the department. Arredondo, the city's first black police chief, was appointed in 2017 following the resignation of Jeanne Harteau, who oversaw the Minneapolis Police Department through one of the most challenging years in history. He first joined the police department in 1989 as a North Minneapolis patrol officer. I have been blessed beyond measure to have and serve the people of this truly wonderful city. After 32 years of service, I believe that now is the right time to allow a new leadership, new perspective, new focus, and new hope to lead the department forward. If I might be able to hypothetically paraphrase this, I'm done with this! That would be my guess. That's, by the way, I'm done with this. That was my ad, but Arredondo said that at a news conference on Monday. Arredondo didn't give a specific reason for his retirement and said he is not seeking positions elsewhere. He will step down mid-January. Jacob Fry says he plans to name an interim chief this week. Great. Fry, who has said he wanted the chief to serve another term, said he learned of Arredondo's final decision to retire Monday morning. The chief has consistently showed up every day with integrity. Okay. Whoa. 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 Jaleel Stallings. Jaleel Stallings. Chief Arredondo had the tapes of the Stallings shooting, which showed the police were the instigators. The police were the aggressors. The police screwed up 1,000 ways from Sunday. The police were randomly firing rubber bullets at citizens of the city of Minneapolis and high-fiving as they hit them. The police went out there, and when he dared to return fire because he thought he was being attacked by white supremacists, they went out and beat him in the street. And the chief had had those videos, and he knew exactly what was on them, and yet he at no point, not only did he not reprimand the officers involved, but he also never he never called off the litigation against Stallings, which eventually had to be laughed out of court as a not guilty, because my God, what do you expect? Do not, I want to be careful here. I understand it's always nice to talk about people in nice ways when it's the retirement party, you got the gold watch and all this stuff. But when your first line is, Mayor Fry, the chief has consistently showed up every day with integrity after the Stallings case, I want you to say that to Stallings' face, Mayor. I want you to say that to his face. Talk about the integrity of the chief of police in Minneapolis. Sweet Jesus. He knew, he saw those videos were there. Going back to Mayor Fry's otherwise laughable statement, he is someone who is the same exact person from a camera as he is in private. Okay. Chief Arundano is truly a son of Minneapolis. Arundano's departure comes less than 2 years after a former Minneapolis police officer murdered George Floyd, sparking international protests against the police and racial reckoning. The department is down hundreds of officers due to a wave of retirements and disability claims as Minneapolis faces a historic surge in violent crime. The impacts of Mr. Floyd's killing certainly will stay with me forever. However, that did not render my decision at this point, Arundano said, citing family and his long career with the department as motivating factors. I mean, let's say, I mean, he was 89 was he when he entered. So, yeah, 32 years. Yeah, that's, you know, in a lot of jobs like this, that's about time to retire. Arundando also worked as a school resource officer, a beat officer, commander of the Internal Affairs Unit, and deputy chair before becoming chief. He and four other black officers sued the department for racial discrimination in 2007, alleging they were unfairly disciplined and missed out on promotions due to their race. The city settled the case, paying out $740,000 in 2009. Thanks, Minneapolis Police Department. Is there no check that the people of Minneapolis can write to cover your ass? Nope, I guess not. During his tenure, Arundando spearheaded several police changes in the department, like expanding implicit bias training for officers and implementing stricter body cam rules. He and the department faced criticism over a number of controversies during his term, including the department's failure to discipline officers for misconduct in response to protesters during unrest. The ballot question put before the voters in November to dismantle the department and create a new public safety department led by the commissioner failed. By a commissioner, but not by the commissioner, by a commissioner. I'm not sad to see him go. I'm not sad. It's been a year and a half since the murder of George Floyd in this city. And it has been comical, the lack of accountability for Minneapolis police officers. Even in the wake of the Stallings case, where you have, and once again, the chief had to have seen the video, had to have known what was on those videotapes, and it's only when those tapes are released by the defense attorney that all of a sudden Chief Arundando's acting like, whoa, wait a second here. When did this happen? Oh, wow, we're going to have a full investigation. Oh, by the way, half the people involved in these tapes have already retired or run away or they're living in Florida at this point. So I guess there's no reason to go after them. Jeez. I'm sorry. It just seems that Chief Arundando's his biggest specialty is covering the ass of bad cops. And as opposed to acting like a tough guy who's going to deal with things, dragging the heels as much as possible. One of the things that someone told me about the disciplining of the police in regards to the union is that it's not like the union contract dictates there's got to be a year and a half between hearings and stuff like this. It's just that's the way they slow the system down. We could speed this system up immediately, have a review fairly quickly. It just is. The system is designed to drag so that if it looks like an officer is about to get found disciplined, you can either have the officer retire, resign, leave, and then leave the taxpayers of Minneapolis on the hook. And I am sorry. I am of the mindset that I do not think Arredondo has been a great chief. Like I said, the Stallings case changes a lot when you realize how little things have changed within that police department. Folks, in my mind, unless they can clean that police department up, it's only a matter of time before another person is murdered live on camera by a police officer. Murdered on camera. Not in the line of duty. No, murdered on camera. It's only a matter of time. For God's sakes, we had a video this weekend that came out of a cop in an Aldi store who basically didn't de-escalate the situation. On quite the contrary, informed everyone he had the right to lay his hands on anyone he wanted to. Jeez. Thanks, Caligula. Dear Lord. That post, I posted that story up from bringmethenews.com earlier this weekend. There doesn't seem to be any intention to clean this department up as it needs to be cleaned up. And you could solve some of these problems fairly quickly by just streamlining the review process. But considering the review process is done a lot by cops who don't want to see the goal is to make cover for the other officers. That's what at least it seems like. I mean, how in the hell do you have the Stallings video for a year plus and not one of those cops has either been fired or thrown out the police department? How in the hell do you think that? How are you expecting me to look at you and say you've had a successful tenure? And even when the Wright County Sheriff came on out and condemned the police department in Minneapolis for the way that they have responded, the rest of the Sheriff's Association said, well, he wasn't speaking for us. Really? You guys are okay with what happened in the Stallings case? The Sheriff's Association thinks that the Minneapolis Police Department does a great job? Really? Because, wow, you need to cut the crap with that thin blue line and realize most police departments are not Minneapolis. And God bless the guy from Wright County who actually had the guts to say, I'm disgusted by their behavior. I'm done defending that police department. A freaking men. We're not talking St. Paul. We're not talking Bloomington, Maple Grove. We're not talking about Blaine, Anoka, Burnsville, or St. Louis Park. We're not talking about these other communities because those police departments don't have the problem of Minneapolis. They don't have the problem in Minneapolis. I know there's a lot of people in Minneapolis who are happy that the ballot initiative failed. But I'm going to state to you the same thing I stated the day after that election, and that is, well, what's your next step to fix this? Because they still got a pretty damn big problem. And so far, there's been a lot of posturing. Well, now we got a retirement. But there's been a lot of posturing about, oh, well, we're going to look into this. Huh. To my knowledge, unless you basically rewrite that union contract, there's not much you can do. And about the only way I can see that you can rewrite that union contract is if you basically do what that ballot initiative wanted. So I need the leaders of Minneapolis who campaigned incredibly hard against that ballot initiative, which is their prerogative. They're entitled to do so. What are you going to do to solve this mess? Are you all just waiting for the feds and just hoping that the feds come out and say, wow, God, that's the worst freaking police department I've ever seen in my life? Is that what you're waiting for? Oh, then you'll get your stern wagging finger out. Oh, I see. God, I that line from the line from from the mayor. The chief has consistently showed up every single day with integrity. What the hell are you talking about, man? Stallings. Seriously, Stallings. How in the world can you even say that line with a straight face knowing what happened to Jaleel Stallings in this town? He had the tapes, and not only did he not discipline any of the officers, he allowed that case to go to trial, only to get laughed out of court by a jury. A jury laughed you out of court. And we haven't even gotten to the officer who was so upset that the white supremacist's image was getting tarnished. How about that? Or the high fives for just aiming rounds at innocent civilians in Minneapolis and thinking, woohoo, like it's some kind of party boat in freaking Tampa. So long. Hope the door hits your ass on the way out. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Wow. In other heavy-duty policing in the metro area news, the day after the 2020 general election, state troopers arrested 646 people for marching onto Interstate 94 in Minneapolis to protest Trump's efforts to stop ballot counting and various social injustices. The mass arrest, the largest in recent state history, signaled the Minnesota State Patrol was done cajoling and pleading with activists. Troopers were going to start taking a hard line on blocking freeways, a tactic that's become almost routine for large demonstrations in recent years. But that show of force prompted an outcry from local lawmakers and left prosecutors with mountains of paperwork. After lengthy delays, hundreds of those cases are now going to trial, and many activists are determined to make it as difficult for prosecutors as possible, refusing plea deals, forcing them to either dismiss the charges or go to trial. We're going to be as big of a nuisance as possible, said Catherine Dahl, one of the defendants. The primary reason I decided to take it to trial because I wanted to discourage the state from using their repressive tactics in the future. Prosecutors have stopped short of giving into activist demands and dismissing charges, but they have offered favorable plea agreements, including restorative justice circles. City attorneys have also dropped the misdemeanor charges, which would give defendants the right to a jury trial and a public defender, leaving just petty misdemeanor charges, which are decided by judges. While hundreds have been persuaded to accept plea agreements, about 280 people have rejected the deals and decided to have their day in court, according to the Minneapolis City Attorney. On the march on November 4th, was part of a national day of protest with people taking to the streets over Trump's threats to challenge the election results as well as the social injustices that have roiled the country. By the way, I should mention this. How many people in this city right now or in this state are furious at these protesters but yet don't have any problem with these guys for, what, slightly blocking traffic on a road versus the guys that tried to overthrow American democracy itself? My guess is they check the skin color to determine their outrage factor. They were protesting Trump's threats to challenge the election results as well as the social injustices that have rolled the country. On that day, a large crowd, including families with children in tow, gathered at the Cedar Riverside neighborhood in Minneapolis. Leaders of the march then took people through city streets before unexpectedly turning onto the eastbound ramp of 94 at Cedar. Within 20 minutes, state troopers surrounded the protesters, preventing people from exiting the freeway and announcing that everyone would be arrested and jailed. Oh, I could just see it. Yeah, we got ya. Well, now, here it is, over a year later, and now you got to go to trial and all these. Oh, thanks. Thanks for creating a whole bunch of work for people. Later, State Patrol announced people would simply be cited and packed demonstrators onto buses that dropped them off at various parts of the city. The whole ordeal lasted nearly 5 hours, with some protesters dancing the Cupid Shuffle to pass the time. Local lawmakers sent a letter to Governor Walz blasting the show of force, calling it counterproductive and a waste of money. These choices wasted public resources and added further strain to a fragile relationship between police and community members, especially in this part of South Minneapolis, located just blocks from the 3rd Precinct, read the letter signed by more than 24 Democratic state legislators. Local lawmakers said the response was out of line with the way the freeway protests had been handled in the past, in which law enforcement tried to move demonstrators off the freeway. Freeway protests have become certain concern for state leaders in recent years as well a political flashpoint, with the Republican-controlled House passing a bill in 2018 that would have made participating in freeway protests a gross misdemeanor. Lawmakers in other states have pushed forward bills that grant immunity to drivers who hit protesters and possibly kill them. You know, murder. Yeah. No charges at all, because that's the way Republicans don't think if it's someone they politically disagree with, they are trying to find any way in the world for their supporters to murder them and they get off the hook. You see, justice. State officials demanded the decision to arrest demonstrators, noting that it's illegal to walk in a freeway, and pointed to safety concerns. Just months earlier, a semi-truck driver threw the line of protesters. Sounds like the more dangerous people are the people in the vehicles on the highway. Just saying. This is actually a pretty brilliant protest. The continued protest, I should say. Because it does tie up an insane amount of resources. And whereas I can see some judges might try to take some sort of hardline stance, I think the vast majority of these judges are going to be like, what are you doing wasting our time? And looking at the prosecutors, looking at everyone, just drop the charges and let this person go. You know, it's, I want to make sure everyone understands, if there's a person out there who's outraged by what I'm saying, who's saying, come on, Matt, they're blocking an highway. People could get killed. If those people were out there protesting Joe Biden, you would probably be sprinting to the front of the line so you could get a photo of yourself carrying the banner to protest Joe Biden's evil regime. Put Trump back in power. So it's garbage. It's just garbage. It's political hackery. That's all it is. And so the next time you have a team wins a sports championship, although that probably won't happen anytime soon in this town, and you have a bunch of people protesting in the streets, I'll expect you to have the same standards as you have for these protesters. Yeah, good luck. Hour two of the show up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Chilled today. Matt, Brett. Brett, I have not had the chance to ask you, how was your weekend?
I had a good weekend. Out streaming some stuff, and then had some friends over Saturday night, so okay. That's what I was up to.
Hey.
How about you?
I actually had a lot of fun. I was over in beautiful downtown St. Paul, Rice Park, which, by the way, gosh, what a lovely, even when the Winter Carnival's not going on, Rice Park, they just light it up so lovely over the holidays. It's so nice down there. I went to the Ordway, caught Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, nice.
Now, you've seen Fiddler, right?
Not the Ordway.
No, but have you seen the film? Years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Great film. It is. I want to make sure I say this before. I don't want anyone thinking I'm being critical when I'm about to say what I'm going to say here. But I want to say this. It is one of the greatest musicals ever made in this country, hands down. It's up there with the best of the best. Sound of Music, My Fair Lady, the. Of course, Guys and Dolls. You can go to Rent. You can go to Hamilton. And Cats, I'll go iffy on Phantom. We'll do Phantom. All right. We'll do that.
End on Cats.
No, not going to do that. Why are there so many cats on stage?
At least better than the movie, I hear.
Oh, don't even. That was a mistake. That was a big mistake. Anyway, so we're talking Grease. We're talking, it's one of the most iconic musicals ever made. The production I saw at the Ordway, spectacular. Just, I love the staging they did there. That's the Broadway touring company, so it's just top-notch. Here is the one problem with Fiddler, if you can call it a problem. The three best songs in that play, in that musical, Tradition, Matchmaker, If I Were a Rich Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the first three songs of the play. I want to make sure I say this clearly. Those three songs, especially Matchmaker and If I Were a Rich Man, those are some of the greatest songs ever written, let alone in musical theater. They are spectacular songs. And then you throw Tradition in there, which is just a great song, the way they kick off the play, the musical. Just spectacular. They're the first three songs. So it's just because it feels like, because Sunrise Sunset is a good song. That's not bad. Do You Love Me is a good song. It is, but they're just, those are such great. I mean, I can't think of another, well, I can't think of any musical that, maybe Sound of Music, that puts such good songs, ding, 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 right in a row, that are just such a good song. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Oh, great film.
Is it interesting they put those right in a way? It's, you know, normally you kind of like putting those in the middle, like when you used to buy CDs, you put like the best song is like track four.
Spread it out. Yeah, put one in the second act. Go ahead. Just do it. You can't really do that. The staging for there's a song that they do when he's got to tell him the story. I'm sorry if I'm ruining it for you. He's got to tell him the story, his wife, the dream story. And so he's talking about ancestors telling him that their oldest daughter can't get married to the butcher. And the staging for that was spectacular. People on stilts dancing around on stage. You know what would happen if I were on stilts trying to dance around on stage? Face first. It would be fun. I mean, I think, you know, we'd sell out the house, standing ovation. But still, ow.
That's a little unfair given your current state right now.
I am hobbling still a little, but I'm doing better. I'm doing better. They have the wedding scene, and they did the dance with the bottles on their heads on stage. And it wasn't like it was, you know, trick hats where they had the bottles.
You see the string.
It's the guy's like nodding and the bottle's not moving an inch. No, they actually put them on. They're fantastic. And boy, those guys, they're nimble. I'm watching them dance. I'm like, wow, even if my leg was completely healed, that's not happening. Unless I'm in a car crash going real fast. You know, it's like, it's just impressive. Fantastic. Go see it. If you get the chance, go see Fiddler. It's well worth seeing. And like I said, it's not a criticism. It's just, you get in there, get ready right away, because the three best songs are bing, bing, bing right at the beginning of it. What's your favorite musical?
Oh, I don't know. I still like Spamalot from back.
Spamalot. Yeah. Spamalot. The Producers is great.
Yeah, Producers right up there, yeah.
Spamalot is fantastic. Gosh, I'm all alone. I'm right here. That whole musical that's nuts. I got to admit, Hamilton. I watched it. Of course, it's on Disney. Mm-hmm. They put it on Disney. God, that's amazing. That is an amazing. I wish I had gotten the chance to see that one when it came through. But back then, because it was such a high demand, you could only get four tickets. And guess what? I got five family members. Guess who was the odd man out? I guess I'll sit home and watch Doctor Who. God.
Oh, you were the odd man. Okay.
Well, of course. I'm not going to tell my... I'm going to leave my... You're my youngest daughter, but you're staying home. I'm going... Daddy's got to go get his Alexander Hamilton on, so... No, I let them go. They went and saw that. Good news for you. Foo Fighters are now coming back again. Now, reminder, the Foo Fighters announced they're coming in tour. They're coming to the bank over at the University of Minnesota campus. And 20 minutes, and we're talking like 20 minutes later, they initially postponed the show because they said that Huntington Bank was not going to allow them to have, you know, their COVID protocols they want to have in place for the show. I have no idea what Huntington Bank was thinking. Foo Fighters made a quick work of finding a replacement venue. They posted out this morning, Minneapolis, we're coming. The famed rock band will play U.S. Bank Stadium. You and I said this. You know what? Play the bank. The other bank. You know, because there's one bank. Never mind.
Yeah.
Go to play the Jawless Sandcrawler on the east side of downtown. That's what you'll play. They'll be there August 3rd as part of the Live in North America 2022 tour. They tweeted on Monday morning. Tickets go on sale Friday, December 10th at 10 a.m. So many songs. Foo Fighters have got so many songs on their own. I always think of Grohl because of Nirvana, but you know the reality is you know that's they could just play their top 40 hits and they'll have a pretty much a decent concert. So, are you a Foo Fighters fan? Are you a Foo
not
fan?
The biggest? Yeah, but I
what's wrong
don't.
With you, man?
I like the Foo Fighters. I just don't, go out of my way to listen to them all the time.
You should. They really are. I think they're the best band around right now. I really do. I'm big fans of like Dury coming on here, Gully Boys, local bands that are coming in. But I'm thinking on that international stage. Yeah.
You're talking current ones. Because I know Rush is right up there for you.
Well, Rush is no longer touring.
Yeah, yeah, that's why
you see
really
that
count,
problem.
Yeah.
You see, thanks for rubbing some salt in that wound, by the way. trying to move past it, but no, here, Brent coming up and digging up all my pain and sadness. Thank you, Brett. U2 is not bad. They're getting real artsy with their shows too, though. I mean, I want to just go see a band in concert. Foo Fighters are up there, man.
So I take it you're going to try to get tickets for this?
I might. They're playing at U.S. Bank. God,
if you could only buy 4 tickets again?
I am leaving a child at home at that point. You didn't like the Foo Fighters anyway. So watch Doctor Who. It's good stuff. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, I do want to make sure I mention Rick Smith. If you didn't miss the interview with our new nighttime host here, 8 to 10 o'clock at night, we talked with him in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll have that up at all of our podcast sites. You can go and listen to that, iTunes, Spotify, the AM950 website, SoundCloud. We have it everywhere.
Yeah, and so. It's posted now, so you can go back and listen as soon as we're done with Matt.
Why are you listening to this show anyway? I mean, seriously. That's the best of it. It's Rick Smith. You'll enjoy that. He's a good guy. And make sure you're here. Make sure you're here 8 to 10 o'clock tonight for his show. 952-946-6205. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for your Monday. Minnesota Department of Health, 6,122 newly reported cases. So Monday's numbers generally are not the consolidated numbers from the weekend. That's tomorrow. That's why tomorrow's numbers are usually pretty atrocious. The Tuesday numbers are pretty high. That is a lot of cases for a single day. As a matter of fact, it's been a long time since we've had a number that high. 6,122, if that's a one-day total, holy God. 38 newly reported deaths. That brings the state's COVID-19 death toll to 9,654. The figures reported Monday relate to a 24-hour period. Yeah, it's the 24-hour period that ended on Friday morning, and then tomorrow we'll have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to combine. Minnesota's test positivity rate on seven-day rolling average is 10.4, which is up from 10.3. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota on the high-risk threshold, not expecting it to go up because of Thanksgiving. That's what happened last year. Through December 3rd, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,570. That's up from the 1,557 reported on December 2nd, so another 13. Of those hospitalized, 346 people are in intensive care. That's down from 353, but 1,224 are in non-ICU care. That's up from 1,203. The most ICU patients during the duration of the pandemic was 399 on December 1st. There are currently only 18 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state. 18, down from 19 on December 2nd. And 12 pediatric ICU beds available, which is up from the 5 available on December 5th. Pediatric non-ICU beds are also strained with only 29 available statewide. As of December 1st, the state reported that 3,667,362 people have completed at least the one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,392,658 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 1,211,323 third dose booster shots. Apparently, we are leading the nation in booster shots. We are the number one state for booster shots. And I'm getting mine. Thank you, Veterans Administration. I'm getting mine over the VA on Thursday. Just wondering where I'm going to go get it. It's like, that's right, I'm a military. Thank you, U.S. Army. You got 4 years of my life. Thanks for the payback. I appreciate it. 952-946-6205. The Minnetonka School Board will consider removing the mask mandate at the middle school level during a meeting in January. The school board discusses the district's safe learning plan monthly, but has been reluctant to set metrics for when it would remove the mask requirement for middle and elementary schools due to rising COVID case numbers, despite calls from some parents to do so. Yeah! The howler monkeys. At its meeting on Thursday, December 2nd, the board decided that whether it reviews the plan next month, it will possibly amend it to remove the mask requirement at Minnetonka Middle Schools East and Minnetonka Middle School West, citing increasing vaccination rates among students, even though COVID rates have been surging statewide. Omicron? Have you guys heard of Omicron? The board decided to only strongly recommend people wear masks at the high school because more than 70% of the students were fully vaccinated, even though school district authorities have acknowledged that the lack of mask mandate in the high school level has led to an increase of student quarantines. So wait a minute. You have your own evidence of your own school district that mask mandates are probably a better option for you school-wide, and you're okay. All right. If the middle school families continue to vaccinate their kids as they have been, the district expects vaccination rates to top 70% in middle schools in the next few weeks. Here are the vaccination rates at each level per Health Services Director Annie Lumbar Pendenson, P-E-N-D-S-O-N. 75.8% of high school students are fully vaccinated. 2.9% have one of two doses. So, you know, you're getting to 77. You're getting almost to that 80% threshold. 57.4% of Minnetonka Middle School East students are fully vaccinated. 14.9% have one of two doses. 52.9% of Minnetonka Middle School West. You know, you can't figure this out. If I can be blunt, it's a wealthy white suburban school district, relatively white suburban school district. Of course, they've got pretty high vaccination numbers. All right. I think that's, you know, pretty much a given. The board thanked Minnetonka parents for getting their children vaccinated, acknowledging vaccination rates among students is much higher than a month ago and much higher than the district anticipated. And that's good. That is absolutely good. The uptake of the vaccines among families has allowed the board to consider removing the mask requirement, board members said. Minnetonka Schools Superintendent Dennis Peterson during the meeting said staff and families have done a good job at staying home when they're sick or showing signs of COVID-19. And he claims that the school's ventilation system has been keeping cases at bay. What? Okay, Dennis Peterson, we've had a few conversations about him before. Wait a minute, do you like every child have a mask on during their, is that their ventilation system? I would like to know how your ventilation system, well, I mean, it's Minnetonka. They probably do have like, you know, AirPods. Here's your O2 pod, enjoy.
That would be very Minnetonka.
It's like, thank you. Junior, get in your O2 pod. Stay safe, our ventilation system. We don't have one of those, you know, those heathen ventilation systems. No, we've got one of those premier ventilation systems. Ooh, it keeps us safer from all those nasty viruses.
Minnetonka's thrilled that they have their own voice now, too, besides Edina.
A conversation between Edina and Minnetonka guy? Why, of course. Hello, you. How are you? I'm doing good. How are you? I'm doing fine. I'm doing very good. I like how you dress. Very snappy. I like how you dress, too. Yes, indeed. Perfect for the marina or for the golf course. There you go. I do need a psychological evaluation, don't I? I like how I actually, if you watch me on the camera doing that, I actually moved.
Yeah, you did lean. Yeah.
I did move in position for the camera. I am crazy.
The worst is if you do that and you mix up the voices.
I don't know.
Well, I guess they're the same.
Maybe get a little mauling or come. No, I'm not. I'll just shut up. I hear once in a while that we don't know what the real secret sauce is. What? Okay. This is, I'm guessing this is Dennis Peterson after talking about their hyper sensitive ventilation system. Yeah, this is Peterson. I hear once in a while that we don't know what the real secret sauce is. We do know what the secret sauce is. It's our ventilation system. We don't let those COVID bacteria even get into the nostrils of people in our school. So that's what's making a difference. And that when they're at school, Peterson said. He actually said that. Shoo, get away. Get away, you bacteria. Our hyper fine ventilation system. You are not supposed to be here. You're trespassing. Shoo. The superintendent, who was criticized last year for comparing COVID-19 to the flu. There was that. I remember that show. I remember we were talking about that. Remember the Wheel and Bell show? Oh, yeah, I remember that one too. Also claims that COVID-19 is rarely being spread among students when they're at school. Wow. Very rarely can we say with any certainty that someone passed COVID at the school. Why do you describe it like someone had bean soup? No one passed it here. No one here farts. Come on, let's just be honest. We're wealthy people. It doesn't happen here.
I mean, he's got some questionable phrasing, doesn't he?
He does. What's with the secret sauce? Secret sauce. That's kind of creepy, dude. That's not kind of. That's creepy. Some people say we don't know what the real secret sauce is. I don't want to know what the secret sauce. Dude, I don't want to know what you're doing to those kids when they're coming into the school. Come to the pump station. What? We very rarely can say that someone passed COVID in school. In fact, almost never is it 100% sure, Peterson said. Often people try to reconstruct the possibilities, forget that they did something that maybe was the exposure. Ah, I see. It wasn't the 8 hours the students spent at school. It was the 1 minute they spent in the car ride on the way home. Aha! Aha! Ventilations. I want to go see this ventilation system at Minnetonka. Now, I'm going to say this. Like I said, your own resource officer in Minnetonka seemed to point to the fact that math seemed to work with some of your own numbers. I would highly recommend you follow that advice and keep masks and vaccinations going in Minnetonka. But hey, secret sauce, ventilation. Hey, we don't know where anyone's getting sick. Is anyone really sick? We don't know. Secret sauce, ventilation system. Okay, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Lord knows, I will say this, if God forbid, Minnetonka, any of the schools out there has a increase in COVID cases, because the first thing I'm going to ask is, wait a minute here, what about the ventilation system? What about your Hyper Star Trek Deep Space Nine ventilation system that you've got here that apparently is so much better than anything we've got anywhere else? Bacteria, they don't even get into our noses here. Nowhere. Okay. Good luck with the secret sauce. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. A god-awful story about COVID update when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I'd like to introduce our new AM 950 high-tech ventilation system, which basically just means everyone that comes into the station, I'm going to take my reusable straw here from my drinking cup and blow air in their face. Are we ready for it? It's our high-tech ventilation system. By the way, apologies early because tomorrow is Taco Tuesday. Remember, I'm a kinkologist. No, stand still, Brett, and don't move. I can just do this the entire show. I'm just going to breathe right in your face. It's our high-tech ventilation system.
It's the secret sauce.
It's the secret sauce to fight something. I don't know. I want to remind everyone as we continue on with the Minnesota coronavirus update, I have a phrase here that I've been saying, I don't know, for almost 2 damn years. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. Ta-da! That's just the reality. I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. That means I want you to get vaccinated and wear a damn mask. Because that's really the best way for us to get through this. It really is. Unfortunately, as I mentioned with Rick Smith when we interviewed with him, there are some people that look at like, how dare you when you say that? And you're like, oh, okay. From they had a story out here that just broke my heart. Since May of 2021, people living in counties that have heavily Donald Trump during the last presidential election have been nearly 3 times as likely to die from COVID-19 as those who live in areas that went for now President Biden. That's according to a new analysis from the NPR folks that examines how political polarization and misinformation are driving a significant share of the deaths of the pandemic. NPR looked at the deaths of 100,000 people in roughly 3,000 counties across the U.S. from May 2021, the point at which the vaccines became widely available. People living in counties that went 60% or higher for Trump in November of 2020 had a 2.78 times the death rate of those that went for Biden. Counties with even higher share of the vote for Trump saw higher COVID-19 mortality rates. In October, the reddest 10th of the country. Okay, I want to make sure we understand this. So if you have 0 to 100, and 0 is it represents the far red, the far right, the most Republican areas of the state, of the country, and 100 represents the most bluest Democratic parts of the country, okay? 0 to 10% would be the most Republican areas. 90 to 100% would be the most Democratic. Does that make sense? I want to make sure you understand this as I lay this out. The reddest 10th of the country saw death rates that were 6 times higher than the bluest 10th. 6 times. So that for every one person who is in one of those hardcore Democratic regions that died, six people in the hardcore Republican areas died. Six. That's according to Charles Gaba, an independent health expert who has been tracking partisanship trends during the pandemic, who helped review the methodology. Those numbers have dropped slightly in recent weeks, but it's down to only 5.5 times higher. Oh, okay, so much better. So every one person in the Democratic area that dies of COVID, there's 5.5%, or 5.5%, 5.5 people that die in a heavily Republican area. The trend was robust even when controlling for age, which is the primary demographic risk of COVID-19 mortality. The data also reveals a major contributing factor, the death rate difference. The higher the vote share for Trump's, the lower the vaccination rate. It's that simple. The analysis only looked at the geographical location of COVID-19 deaths. The exact political views of each person taken by the disease remains unknowable, but the strength of the association compared with the polling information about vaccines strongly suggests that Republicans are being disproportionately affected. And I don't want you dead, and I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. I don't care if you got an R next to your name. You vote Republican. You voted Republican your entire life. I don't care. I don't want you dead. And maybe you guys on the right are chuckling it up, saying that every six of you dying in October versus one of them is a fair, as long as one of them died, I don't care if it killed six of us. How can you, I want to ask the Republican politicians, the Minnesota Republican Party, I want to ask you a question. You guys scream about your Christianity and your faith. You scream about it. But how can you hear numbers like this? And if you are a true Christian, not immediately go to the most red parts of the state and say, people, we were wrong, get vaccinated immediately. Because that would be the Christian thing to do. Gospel of Matthew, you know, wanted to heal the sick. Remember that? Yes. That would mean vaccinations. Jesus was pro-vaccination. He was. But just that aside, just compassion and caring. The decency of humanity, for God's sakes, where is it in you people? Oh, you'll sit there and if you're talking to someone in the larger news networks in the Twin Cities, you'll talk about, well, I don't know where anybody got the impression I was against vaccines. But the minute you get out into your district, you talk about, you know, the vaccines came from aliens, right? Have some decency. Have some humanity. For God's sakes, these are your people. How is it I'm showing more compassion for them than you are? You should be sprinting out to the most Republican parts of the state and saying, people, all right, enough's enough. The gig's up. Get vaccinated. Wear a mask.
Well, but because we've been lying to them for so long, they'll think that I'm a traitor. I've been brainwashed that I'm like one of those, you know, people that aliens that grew from a pod person. That's what they're going to think.
It's time for you to grow up. It's time for you to show that you still care. for your fellow man. Your voters. Just on, I mean, I don't want to boil it down to something so petty, but just on the voting numbers. Just on the voting numbers. You've got, you know, you're saying, well, every one person in Minneapolis that you know, the most blue area of Minneapolis that dies of COVID, six are dying in the most red parts of the state, or 5.5 to now. It doesn't figure out where you're starting to lose your voters. Have some decency. Have some compassion. If you truly are Christian, as you keep putting out more and more lights to say, I love Jesus, well then show it and get out into those Republican districts and say, I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt. Get vaccinated. Get vaccinated and wear a mask. Because right now I can scream it from the top of the hill up here in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and no one out in rural Minnesota is going to care because it's just that liberal Matt McNeil. The only way this is going to stop is if you grow up, put on the big boy pants, and get out there and show some humanity and some compassion. But this is me not holding my breath. Fake Christians indeed. My God. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I just don't get this. I don't get this. There comes a point when you see numbers like this. For every one person in a Democratic area that's dying of COVID, which is tragic enough as it is, you've got six people in Republican areas dying of COVID. Six. At what point do you not go on out there and just say, wow, this is okay. Enough's enough. But you guys, it's almost like they're too addicted to the idea of the, you know, the going to the crowd and having the conspiracy theories. See, I'm part of you. I believe in conspiracy theories too. No, a grown adult. And I don't care who the person is, what political party they are. The grown adult would be coming in there and saying, you know what? Enough's enough. We are losing way too many people out here. We are having, I mean, it's a travesty to have any member of my district have to be flown to Fargo or Eau Claire or Madison or Des Moines to get medical treatment because the hospitals around here are overwhelmed. Enough's enough. Get vaccinated and wear a mask. And I understand, well, they're going to get mad at me. That's what called leadership is. That's what called being a decent human being is. And I'm sure you'll go to church and as you praise Jesus getting born out there in on December 25th, you'll be praising him. The reality is that you're sure as heck are not doing anything that he would have encouraged you to do. If you're sitting there and encouraging people not to get vaccinated, not wear a mask, for God's sakes, take care of the sick. My God, how many times in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John does Jesus talk about taking care of the sick? I don't remember Jesus ever saying, it sucks to be you. I don't ever remember that. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt. And I should add that fourth line, which I've added a few times. I don't want you having a lifelong health crisis because of COVID. Please get vaccinated. Please wear a mask. Moving on to a different story now, away from the coronavirus. Crowd of hundreds gathered in Hastings Saturday as the city remained in the spotlight over the treatment of the family of outgoing Hastings School Board Chair Kelsey Waits, whose transgender child was outed by a group of jackasses, parents of a horrible Facebook page during the election season. Waits and husband Chris spoke to CNN about the multiple instances of harassment and bullying directed at their 8-year-old child, kit they experienced after they were targeted by a group calling themselves Concerned Parents of Hastings, originally called Conservative Parents of Hastings, overweights the support of COVID-related mask requirements in schools. Things escalated when the group publicly outed Kit as transgender. An 8-year-old, this group of grown adults, attacked an 8-year-old. Yeah, big. Oh, you're such big people. You're such big people and so Christian to an attack an 8-year-old. Oh, and actually, no, you're not big people and you're not Christian. You're just horrible jackasses. That's all you are, Concerned Parents of Hastings. You're all horrible, horrible human beings. Every stinking one of you. Every one of you. They suggested Kelsey and Chris should be locked up for child abuse in reference to Kit, who uses pronouns they, them, as actually a boy. The CNN story prompted an outpouring of support for the Waits family with community members, elected officials, and the LGBTQ plus activists from outside Hastings working together on how they could bring a positive response for Kit and the Waits family, leading to Saturday's rally. Valerie Stoher, I'm sorry if I mispronounce that, leader of the Afton Indivisible, a grassroots organization striving for progressive change, was one of the first people to organize what would be the community rally for trans kids. When the story broke, it was personal for me. I'm lesbian. I have been the target of hate speech, and I know how good it feels when allies show up, Stoher said. So I made some phone calls, and people in the community, statewide organizations, and leaders of the trans community showed up. Many of us didn't know each other, and in 5 days, we planned this incredible event. It's a powerful story about pushing back against bigotry and hatred. A few days earlier, people not only in Hastings, but in West St. Paul, Hampton, Minnesota, and even Florida, Georgia, California, Kentucky, left their porch lights on to stand in solidarity with the Waits family. The hashtag #IStandWithKit also began early this week to support Kit Waits. Concerned Parents of Hastings Facebook page has since been deleted, as well as, it sounds like, the website by the group's administrators. Oh, Boo Boo Kitty got their feelings hurt and ran away. Oh, you didn't want to be outed, did you, you bunch of freaking cowards? Cowards. Oh, listen to that. Cowards. Oh, you hear me saying that to you? All you Concerned Parents of Hastings. Cowards. That's right. You're a bunch of cowards. You are. You are. Since they've run away because you were trying to find out who we were after we outed an 8-year-old. You're horrible. Every one of you is just a horrible human being. Just are. Back to that in a sec. When it came time for Kelsey and Chris Waits to speak at the rally, they wanted to give a special shout-out to one member of the family who isn't come up as often as their own last week, their older daughter, Abby. Kelsey said, there has been a mention of me, a mention of Chris, and a mention of Kit. And I just wanted to do a special shout-out to the best big sister and best ally that Kit could ever have asked for, and that's Abby. Chris Waits added, we love you, Abby. Lee Finke, a multimedia storyteller for the ACLU of Minnesota and a trans woman herself, said that the rally was one of the largest in support of trans children the state of Minnesota has ever seen. Finke spoke on the, oh, good job, Concerned Parents of Hastings. Look, your actions brought together the largest group protest ever in support of trans rights. How about that? Finke spoke on the positive outreach and support she has seen from multiple communities towards the Waits family and specifically Kit. I am from St. Paul, and the response everywhere that I'm looking has been extremely gracious and loud, Finke said. I know a lot of people have shown interest. A lot of people have stepped up to support Kelsey. I know people, whoever the people are who are on the other side of this, they have shrunk. Oh, yeah, they've run away. You're little scaredy pants. They're scared. Among those in attendance Saturday was State Senator Aaron Murphy. Hello, Aaron. Who spoke to the crowd, as well as Senator Mary Kunesh, of course, one of our favorites here, and of course, a regular with Native Roots Radio coming up after us, a DFL from Fridley, Representative Michael Howard, DFL from Bloomington, Cheryl Joachim, my House Rep. Nice job, Representative Joachim. Kayla Berg. Oh, Kayla, that is, you know, Representative, absolutely love her. Love her from Burnsville. Shortly after the conclusion of the rally, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz sent out a tweet sharing his support of Kelsey Waits and her family. Nicely done, Governor. Two of the Kelsey Waits' fellow school board members attended, spoke at the rally on Saturday. Lisa Hedden and Brian Davis have worked with Waits on the board since they were elected in 2019. Davis and Hedden spoke with what the board plans to do not only during this Wednesday's meeting, but what they can do for the students who experience bullying from adults in the community moving forward. It's about a mission, and both oars are in the water, all hopefully being on the same song sheet. And that's very important to note. Not only is the school board election supposed to be nonpartisan, they are nonpartisan on purpose, because it doesn't matter where you sit in terms of your politicals. Overall politics is about these children, which brings me back to my point. There are three brand new school board members who, at the very least, seem to be aligned with this concerned parents of Hastings Facebook group. At least, I think at least one or two of them seem to be. And once again, the cowards have run away all of a sudden. I want to step back even further, if I can. I want to remind you what the implication of that is. If these incoming school board members were part of that group on Facebook, then the school board members attacked an 8-year-old child, outed that child, tormented that child, just so they could win an election to serve on the school board that would oversee that child and every other child in the Hastings School District. Holy crap. Yeah, exactly. So those three school board members need to come on out and definitively say, were they or were they not part of that Facebook group? And if they were, like I said, I think people should scream shame at them everywhere they go. That every restaurant they go in there, I'm not saying to do it. I'm just saying that's what I think should happen. It's, my God, how do you attack an 8-year-old child? In that little group of morons that decided to do this, at what point did you guys say, we're going to go get the 8-year-old? Seriously, you're horrible human beings. You're absolutely horrible human beings attacking an 8-year-old child. So once again, I would love to know if those three incoming school board members are full of hatred and bigotry and were part of that Facebook group, or were they not? I would love to know that. Love to know that. I think they've all of a sudden got quiet. I don't know why you guys are asking about this. Because you attacked an 8-year-old, you human garbage. How about that? Julie is in Minneapolis. She wanted to chime in today. Welcome on in, Julie. Thanks for holding.
Yeah. See, Matt, I want to tell your listeners about something I heard on NPR. Under the auspices of being the Christian right, there's a group called Alliance Defending Freedom. They have a, believe it or not, $50 million a year annual budget. I didn't know this, Matt, but the anti-trans movement and the anti-abortion movement in this country, they're one and the same. And there are many groups that are pouring in, you know, pouring money into their despicable behavior. And this $50 million, that's just one group, but there are others. So, well, I think I'm going to throw up right now, but okay. I just wanted to let you know.
Heave-ho there, Julie. Good luck. No, I would say this, is that there is a tremendous amount of coordination on the right, and the reality is they can't win on the issues, so they have to win on hatred and fear. That's all the Republican Party is today, isn't it? Hatred and fear. That's everything the Republic, hatred. There's no hope. There's no positivity. It's hate this person, be afraid of that person. That's the only thing the Republicans do. And they've got a lot of money to bankroll it. And they're not very Christian if you do that. I'm going to just be honest with you. Jesus was not one of those people going, oh, I hate that person. And oh, be afraid. Oh, be afraid. No, it wasn't. Hope, welcoming, compassion, caring, kindness, love. You know, as you guys like on the right like to say, you know, how much you try to embody Jesus, maybe you should read a little about what he was about, because you guys seem to be way off course at this point. I mean, nowhere near it. You know, it's like hitting the dartboard, throwing the dart at the dartboard and hitting the wall behind you. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Hey, you know what? I'm, you know, a former Catholic, still looking for a church. I'm working on that. I'll talk about that another day. But I, you know, trust me, I like my Bible. I've read it. Gospel of Matthew is a good one. You should probably read that. Seriously, if I can make a suggestion, Republicans, read the Gospel of Matthew, because I got news for you. Nothing that you guys do matches up with anything in there. I know, it's a hoot. Page turner. You'll enjoy it. It will be a surprise. It will really be a surprise, you know, when you sit there and scream about, we need to cut food stamps. Oh, we need to build a wall and Mexico will pay for it. Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, I don't want to ruin it for you, but okay. Gospel of Matthew. Just read through that, okay? Christians. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Kim Crockett, the former vice president and general counsel for the Center for the American Experiment, who was suspended from the think tank after making racist remarks about Somali refugees in St. Cloud, will announce this week she's running for Minnesota Secretary of State. People are stepping up to fight, and I include myself in that, she told a group of activists in a gathering of the Liberty Tea Party patriots. I wanted to let you know tonight I am running for Secretary of State of Minnesota. I've been debating this for some time, whether I should make this run in 2022, she said in remarks captured on video shared by the DFL. It's a special year. I don't want you to get discouraged. I want you to get in the mood and fight and join me in the fight. Crockett, a lawyer, has repeatedly been mulling a run, but her remarks last week confirmed those plans. The Minnesota GOP has struggled to attract candidates to run for Secretary of State, and the field, which includes former House candidate, is sparse. She currently works as a legal policy advisor with the Minnesota Voters Alliance, an advocacy group that has filed challenges in Minnesota opposing mask requirements at election polling sites. She said that the state's top election official, she would focus on election integrity, casting doubt whether the results of the 2020 election. We've got a work to do in this state, she said during a September event sponsored by Alpha News. Other than California, we're probably the state with the least amount of integrity. We have a ton of work to do here. Okay, wait, stop. We have paper ballots. All you have to do is get the paper ballot and count them. When you say there's no integrity, we have the most, clearly, one of the most integrity-strong voting systems in the country. You guys keep pointing to, like, oh, they've been cut. No, it's a paper. And never mind. It's lost on these people. Ken Martin, DFL party chair, said in a statement, Kim Crockett wants to make it harder for you to vote. She's running to restrict your freedom to vote by attacking common sense things like early voting and vote by mail. Crockett's lack of respect from the right to her fellow Minnesotans is no surprise, since she was recently suspended from her job and forced to apologize for making comments so racist they made the headlines in the New York Times. In 2019, comments Crockett made to the New York Times caused an uproar. She was interviewed about racial tensions in St. Cloud, which has a large population of Somali refugees, while she still worked for the Center for the American Experiment. I think of America as a great assimilator, as a rubber band, but with this, we're at the breaking point, Crockett said of the Times article. These aren't people coming from Norway. Let's put it that way. These people are very visible. She later apologized but was suspended without pay for 30 days. You see, the reality is this. If you're the Republicans, I'm almost going to say she's a shoo-in to win as in your primary process. She'll get destroyed in the general election against Steve Simon. But, yeah, this is where you're at. This is the further to the right you are. And, you know, racist comments like this, what she apologized for, that's a plus. Expect her actually to be a strong contender. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.